Welcome back to Season 3 of the Sex Life Unleashed podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen DeWitt, and this season, we're going to be doing a deep dive on what it takes to remove the taboo that's been there for too long. We're going to strive to normalize these conversations and seek out those places where these conversations can be so helpful and transformative. We're going to rethink kink and everything that comes along with it. Let's go. And welcome back. I'm Dr. Stephen DeWitt, and I'm here answering your questions. This week we're taking on, what do you do when you don't want to have sex and your partner does? How do you navigate that? That can be awkward. I've been in that situation before. How do you make someone want to have more sex or spice things up? How do you be quiet around sex because you got kids? Is it okay to be a boss in life and then submissive in the bedroom? And how do you get rid of all that shame and guilt after you explore kink? We're diving into all this and more. I invite you to follow me on social media, specifically Instagram at Dr. DeWitt, D-R-D-E-W-I-T. You can get into my world, find out what I have going on. There's some fun things that I'm working on, and always love your feedback. Let's jump into our first question. What if I just don't want to? Don't get me wrong, hubby and I have a great sex life, LOL, but sometimes I express to him that I just don't want to. And maybe I am not expressing in the proper way, but I feel the tension that I'm turning him down. How do I communicate this a little better to him with him not feeling rejected? Thank you so much for this opportunity to ask these questions. I've been loving the videos. Okay, great. I'm loving that you're loving the videos. I hope you can tell that I love making the videos. So really great question is, you're not wanting to connect sexually, your husband is, and then you feel bad because there's this tension or maybe this resentment that's kind of like underlying things because he feels rejected. And this is something that's very common, is having a different sexual drive, a different sexual sometimes than your partner. And you know, somewhere along the way, we were fed this Disney kind of narrative that if you really love the person, you're going to like meld together and have amazing sex for the rest of your life. It doesn't work that way. So it's very natural and very normal to be on different sexual wavelengths than your partner is. And it's okay not to want to have sex. It's okay to want to have sex when your partner doesn't want to have sex. But because we've grown up in this with this narrative, and again, what I call a sex negative society, that it's supposed to be a particular way. When a partner says no to us, it's not they're saying no to sex that night. It's almost like they're rejecting us as humans. And then we add all this story to it, right? Like, they're not attracted to me. They don't like my body. They are more attracted to someone at work. I don't know. Like, our minds can go wild places. So what I would invite you to do is to, there's a couple levels, is think about having a conversation with your husband about this. Not when he asks and you say no, right? Because it's like, that's really like raw and really vulnerable and can probably, you know, lead to an argument. I've experienced that personally. But set up a time to just talk to your husband and find out and ask him and be like, hey, you know, I know the last couple times you approached me for sex, I wasn't in the mood. And I get this feeling that, you know, there's this underlying tension there. And I just want to check in with you about that. Is that the truth? And just so often when we are not in communication, we're telling ourselves, we're talking to ourselves, and we have these stories in our head. So let's get it out and find out in reality if that's his experience. He may be like, no, no, it's totally cool. Like, I know last year or 2 years ago, whatever, I wasn't in a very sexual headspace and I wasn't, you approached me and I wasn't in the mood for sex, and it's no big deal. Or he may say, yes, it is something that was there for me and it is uncomfortable and I worry about XYZ. Perfect. Because now we're dealing in reality, not just what's going on in your head. Then it's to find out what would make it easier for him to be able to, like, dealing with the reality that you're not always going to be on the same page, that he may want sex and you may not want sex at some particular time. Find out
what would work for him in maybe having that conversation a different way, or maybe sharing ahead of time, or him maybe putting it out there so it's less of a rejection for him and makes it easier for him. So that's just purely communication. Then I think there's an important place to talk about and normalizing the fact that it's okay not to want to have sex when your partner wants to have sex, right? Because consent is always there, regardless if you've been married for 25 years or you're hooking up with someone for the first time. Then the other place is, how can we connect sexually that doesn't necessarily look like the way that we normally connect sexually? So I would bet if your husband approaches you and you say yes, there's a particular pattern that you follow. So what are the pattern interrupts that you could put in that, hey, I don't want to do the full shebang, whatever that looks like for you. I would be open to this. That takes less energy. That takes less emotional output. That is more focused on my pleasure and receiving, or your pleasure and receiving. So it's being able to pull apart these different ways that we connect sexually and interrupt some of those patterns. And he's like, oh, that would be great if I went down on you. That would satisfy me. I don't know what that is. Or he'd be like, oh, it'd be great if I just want to feel connected and intimate. If you could rub my back, or if I could give you a massage, or whatever it is. But finding out those different ways of, and diversifying the way that you connect sexually and that you satisfy those needs. But it all starts in that communication. What is it like for you when I say no? And what is missing for you? Because it may be just a purely carnal sexual thing, like, I want to get my rocks off. Or it could be, I want to feel close to you. Or I'm having a really stressful time at work and I want to de-stress. Or I feel distant from you. And so when you can get underneath of what sex represents for him, then there's other opportunities that you can be like, oh, if it's de-stressing, great. What are some other ways that I could help you de-stress that doesn't look like having sex? If you want to feel closer to me, what are ways that we can do that if I'm not in a sexual headspace that we can feel close together? It's having those conversations, pulling things apart and normalizing it. It is completely normal. It is not something that is strange or different. Anybody who has a sexual partner for any length of time, there's going to be differences that show up. All right. So hope that's helpful. Okay. Let's move on to question number two. How to make a close-minded partner to be more sexually active and willing to spice things up? Great question. I love this. How to make a close-minded partner to be more sexually active and willing to spice things up. Now, the operative word here that I want to focus on is make. And I'm going to ask you, what's it like when someone tries to make you do something? Probably you want to punch them in the throat if you're anything like me. So when we're talking about sex, and listen, I get your frustration, right? You're with someone, you want to try some new things, you're excited. You may be more sexually adventurous, more kinky, have more experience, whatever. And you're like, oh my God, there's this person that I love. There's this person that I'm attracted to. And I want to try, you know, all these things and explore with that person. They're like, no. When we come at it from how do we make someone do something, it rarely works. Maybe they'll do it for a while, but there'll be some resentment there. And it's not actually getting to the source of why. And that's the place what I would invite you to start from is start creating a place of curiosity and understanding about your partner and why they construct their view of sex different from yours. Not right, not better, not wrong, not worse, just different from yours. Because I promise you, your partner feels pressure. Your partner feels like they're quote unquote not good enough. Your partner may feel like they're not being able to provide you what you want. They feel bad about it. And it may show up differently. It may show up with bravado. It may show up with them blaming you. It may show up with feeling sad or feeling upset. The access that I've seen that works is not trying to make someone do something, but how do you create a space of curiosity and understanding about your partner, having them feel comfortable to share with you about those things. And then that is the place to start. Another place to look at is empowering that person to think about what could potentially be something that they would like to explore. And now that can be really difficult for some people. You know, there's a lot of people, specifically a lot of women, that are like, I don't really know what I like, because they've been stuck in this performative paradigm for so long of just like, I'm supposed to do this for my partner because I need to be a good girlfriend, wife, a hookup, whatever it is, and have never thought about what it is that I like. So providing resources for that person, for them to do their own work in a non-pressure, it could be books, it could be links, it could be people on social media, it could be like that person to be like, hey, this is really interesting, and a safe place for them to personally explore for themselves, and then be able to facilitate that conversation with you when they're comfortable sharing. That's really the starting point for having someone be open to meeting you where you're at. And again, not right, wrong, good, bad, just different. All right, next question. Question number three. I'm a boss in all areas of my life. At work, I run my own business with kids, supporting friends and family going through difficult times. And in the bedroom, I want to be submissive, but part of me thinks that's weak and or wrong. Please help. So it is not uncommon for people who enjoy being submissive sexually to be very powerful in their life or have a lot of responsibility in their life. And when they are sexual, they just want to be able to relax. They want to be able to give or share their power with somebody else. Now, there is this misconception that being submissive is weak, is lesser than, is having less power. When in reality, if we look at power dynamics, the submissive actually has more power in healthy consensual power exchange, because the submissive chooses to share or to give their power to someone else. And at any time, they can take that power back, where the dominant is there just receiving that power and that control from the submissive. You can be a strong submissive. You can be a powerful submissive in that place. And where that gets rooted in is being able to communicate what really works for you, being able to create your desires, your fantasies, what you need to actually explore those fantasies. And this is something I actually did some writing on today and sent an email out to the people on my email list. We often can get caught up in, oh, this is the fantasy that we have, but we don't often think of what needs to be satisfied underneath that. So feeling of safety, of respect, of love, of trust, of communication, like all of those things are necessary. And there, you could add another dozen things for you in your life of what's really necessary for you to be able to access those places and explore those fantasies. But being submissive does not necessarily mean weak, does not necessarily mean wrong. And it is very common to have a dichotomy of showing up really powerfully in your life and sexually want to explore that submissive side of you. Now, all those things come with communication, with understanding yourself and your needs and your desires and your fantasies, and being okay with that. And it may be a conversation that you have with your partner, your partners, that afterwards, and part of aftercare is talking about that and sharing what they really like, sharing what you really like, sharing. You can actually tell a partner what you need to hear afterwards, so you feel that appreciation, that love, that respect. And I would also invite you to do some writing about that, so you can come to a place where you're like, hey, yeah, this is an awesome, powerful place that I come from, and it really works for me. Because all it is has to work for you and has to work for the person that you're connecting with sexually, and everyone else, who cares? All right, question number four, do you have tips for cognitive dissonance when it comes to sex and kinks and shame and guilt? Really great question. I had to look this one up because cognitive dissonance for me is one of those words that I understand, and I've written about it, I've read about it, I've studied, like I get it, but then sometimes in my brain I'm like, what is cognitive dissonance? So it's doing something and having different or conflicting thoughts and feelings about that. So an easy one is like people who think they're healthy and then they smoke, but they know that smoking is actually bad for them. If I apply this to this question, so do you have tips for cognitive dissonance when it comes to sex and kinks and shame and guilt? So doing something like the sex and the kink, which feels really good, which you want to explore, and you do that, and then the resulting shame and guilt associated with that. So I am a sexologist, I'm sex positive, and I want to be able to support you in exploring safely and consensually sex and that kink that really works for you. The part where I think we can do some work on is that shame and guilt. So in my book, The Sexual Freedom System, there's a four-step process that I go through to be able to deconstruct some of those narratives that we've had our whole life, you know, that have been passed down from generation to generation to generation that we have inherited or we have learned from our own personal experiences and or trauma. The first piece is developing your sexual self-awareness. So being able to identify where that shame and where that guilt comes from. And that could be many, many different places, right? It could be family, it could be religion, it could be sex education, it could be past bad experiences, it could be the culture you grew up, wherever. Like there can be so many things where that is rooted in. I went through my own personal journey before I went to school and did my degrees of being able to pull that apart for myself. And it was so powerful for me to go through that process. I've worked with hundreds of people to go through this process to be able to distinguish that you are a great person and you love, honor, and respect people, and you're super kinky and you want to explore, you want to have lots of sex, you want to do those things. Now, we are raised that this is good and this is bad. The reality is these are both important parts of who you are. And then what we want to explore is how to bring those two things together. And there is movement in that direction of like sex positivity and kink positivity and talking about healthy power exchange relationships and what that actually looks like and diversifying what sex looks like. So we don't get stuck in a boring sex life where we're resentful or we don't have sex or because we've never been taught how to communicate this. We've never been taught how to process our own sexuality, our own desires, our own kinks in a really healthy and safe way. What I would invite you to do is do some, you know, you're going to hear this again and again, but do some writing. Write in a list all the things that you really enjoy doing sexually in kink. The next one is, what does that bring up? What is that shame? What is that guilt? In the next column or the next page, be like, where is that from? And don't get too caught up in it. Just be like, hey, I'm giving myself 30 minutes. I'm creating these three lists. That's it. And just brain dump, just like a stream of consciousness. And if there's stuff that you want to add to those lists, add them to the lists. Then come back to that 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever it is. So do this in a week and write how those things. So we wrote the things that you enjoy, the shame and guilt that it brings up, the sources of those shame and guilt, like where did you learn to feel bad about those things? And then I want you to write how that impacts you today, right? How that interferes in your sex life, how that interferes in your day-to-day life, how that interferes in you interacting with your partner, how that interferes in the type of sex that you create. Starting to pull those things apart and developing your sexual self-awareness is the first part of starting to develop an understanding and beginning to integrate those two parts of who you are. That's where I invite you to start. There's more questions that I want to get to, but if you want to talk more about this, please reach out to me. More than happy to talk to you because it is something that is worth developing and loving yourself because you should, because you deserve it, regardless of how kinky you are. You're an amazing human being. You're an amazing employee, daughter, son, uncle, aunt, mom, dad, grandpa, grandma, whatever you are still that person, regardless of what type of sex that you like. Okay. Number five, my partner and I don't have sex as often as we would like because our kids stay up late and I'm so worried they could hear us or could wander in and see us. They've both always been poor sleepers. One has additional needs that make it difficult for him to settle and the other one can't settle down due to anxiety. We've tried to improve their sleep. Believe me, how can we manage this? I would go back to the source. Getting them to sleep better is going to be better for them. I get their health, their development. I'm not sure how old your kids are, but listen, more sleep is better. Cool. But we're talking about you and your partner having sex and carving out that time, which is really important. So you're worried that they could hear you or they could wander in and see you. If it's wandering in and see you, get a lock on the door. Put a doorstop underneath so they can't do that. Have them understand when there's a sign on the door, be like, mom and dad, adult time, put that on there. The thing where I would invite you to start is I think there's a place of normalizing sex in the home, of normalizing sex between partners inside of a family unit. And this is going to be age appropriate, but communicating that. Hey, it's mom and dad adult time. Or it's our adult time, we're going to be out in an hour. And I know that may be like pearl clutching for you to be like, oh my good, how can we do this? But like, sex is healthy and sex is normal. It's something that you and your partner enjoy. And at some point in the future, I would hope that you want your kids to enjoy. And normalizing this and not having it be this taboo thing that needs to be hidden all the time, it needs to be respected and it needs to be communicated in an age-appropriate way. But it's something that I think can serve you and serve your kids really well. It's kind of like growing up in a household where you're highly restricted from eating any kind of candy or any kind of sweets. And then they're bad and wrong and you can't do that. And then kids, and this is me, being like out there and being like, oh my God, I can buy whatever I want, eat whatever I want, and I want to do all those things because there's this bad taboo thing that I shouldn't do. It's the same thing with sex. And there are places in the world and some European countries in particular where it's just normal. It's just like, this is what we do. We're in a partnership and sex is an important part of it. And sometimes we're like, hey, we're going to go have sex. Now that may be outside of your comfort zone, but there are ways of communicating that in a way. So it's not something that is this taboo thing that you can't do, that you shouldn't do, that's like quiet, because kids are so intuitive. And if you grow up in that space, you're always curious about it, but it's not something that is discussed. It's not something that is normalized. So then kids go think, oh, this is bad. This is something that needs to be hidden. This is something that isn't talked about. And that actually doesn't serve them in how they navigate things. That's my thought. I wish you all the best. Number six. I've never been with a guy. I've never been with a guy where my pleasure was purely his focus. Is this unusual? I'd love to experience this. Sadly, it's not to be now. I feel I've only had mediocre sex. Okay. So I've never been with a guy where my pleasure was purely his focus. Is this unusual? No, it's not unusual. And I'm assuming that you're female identified. Now, I just want to be clear. You said purely his focus. Now, maybe that's something that you want. You just want to be worshipped by an individual. But I think if I look at it, is for most people, it's like, let's have some mutual pleasure, not just focused on him getting his pleasure. You have a blank check to write whatever you want on it, actually, but you need to believe it. And you need to set boundaries and you need conversation structures in place to actually have you access this. And what I mean by that is, I don't know how you were raised. I don't know like your upbringing, but you can advocate for yourself. You can say, if you want an all access pass to this ride called my body, these are the things that we need to discuss. This is how I like to be pleasured. This is what's important to me. Tell me about the things that turn you on about me. Tell me about, have those conversations ahead of time. Please have those conversations ahead of time. I know some people are like, oh, it takes the romance or the fun out of it. Listen, it can still be super hot. It can still be super fun. But having those conversations ahead of time, you're going to become much better at reading red flags from people who don't give an F about your pleasure. And those people, we're going to be like, hey, thanks. I think we're looking for different things at this time. Best of luck to you. But being able to talk about this, being able to put forward what's important to you and see where that person is at. See if you guys are a good match ahead of time is going to serve you so much. It is not unusual for women to be stuck in this performative paradigm where it's like just performing sex. You're not really present. You could be faking orgasms. You could be up in your head thinking about school or work the next day or doing laundry or taxes or something like that while you're having sex. It could be like, oh, we're just going to do the same boring thing and they're going to get off and I'm not going to get off. If you find yourself identifying with any of that, yeah, you're probably stuck in this performative paradigm. So how do we switch out of that performative paradigm into a pleasurable paradigm? And part of that is being able to identify yourself, what works for you and what feels good for you. And then how do you communicate that effectively with a partner so they're able to respect that? The other thing that I'd offer you is, if you're navigating this newly with a partner, is create scenarios or situations or scenes where you can test this, where you're not fully like, okay, we're having sex now, we're doing the full shebang, but did this person listen to me about what I like, about how slowly I like, about how I like to be touched, about what fantasies I have, about how I like to be treated before, during, and after? It doesn't have to be jumping headfirst into the pool. It could be like dipping your toe in and seeing, and then checking in with that person, being like, hey, I know this is new for us, and I shared with you that this is something that I enjoy and that I like, and I noticed that you really did it, so thank you. Or I noticed that you didn't do that, and I just wanted to check in and see if there was any kind of miscommunication. But really digging in and being able to identify that for yourself and be able to communicate that with a partner. Unfortunately, it's not unusual, and there are steps that you can take to actually shift that and move from that performative thing that you're just stuck in to pleasurable thing. And unfortunately, it would be nice to be like, hey, it's the guy that's supposed to do it. But often, in this case, I'm assuming a female, to be able to advocate, to be able to have those conversations and really get clear with what you need and what you want. Okay, so question number 7. I wouldn't class myself as a bisexual, but I do like women, I guess, and I like to watch girl-on-girl porn sometimes, and I bring myself off to it. One of my regrets in life is not sleeping with a woman before I settled down. I really wish I had tried it out. Is it normal to feel like this? Well, let me tell you something. Is it normal to have regrets in life? Absolutely. Now, the point that I'm interested in pushing back on a little bit is settling down. What does settling down mean? It means you're like dead and you're like, okay, well, now this is my life. And this is, I can't do anything in my life. I can't enjoy. I can't explore. No, it's not like that. This is an opportunity at any point in your life to look at and analyze and be like, hey, what do I want? And this could be anything. This could be in your career, with money, with finances, with relationships, with sex, and be like, this is really hot. This is something that I want to enjoy. And I don't care if you do or don't identify as bisexual or not. It is a place for you to be like, hey, this is hot. And settling down does not mean dying. Settling down does not mean like, oh, I'm going to hang my penis on the wall, or I'm going to hang my pussy on the wall, and this is just what it is. No, that can be amazing. That can be super hot. And it could be something that is created. Now, when you say settling down, I'm going to assume that means I have a partner, I have kids, I have a job, I have a mortgage. That's what it means to me. All of those things are mutually exclusive from you exploring with a woman. Now, that takes work. That takes communication. That takes talking to your partner about that. That takes numerous other things. But I'm really someone who wants everyone to squeeze the juice out of life in whatever part of life that you need that juice squeezed out of, including your sex life. But don't resign yourself to like, oh, I'm settled down. I can't do this. And it's not available. Right? Because no one died saying, oh, I had too much hot sex. I promise you that.
And that wraps things up for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have questions for me, you can submit them to me, share them anonymously, or you can include your handle on Instagram. You can DM me at Dr. DeWitt, DrDeWitt. Please subscribe, share, and like this. That makes a big difference for me. I also want to offer or invite you to join my secret society. It's a group that meets once a month. It's a group of powerful people that come together and have real conversations about sex. They bring questions, they support each other. It's really powerful. So if you're interested in that, I'm gonna leave a link down below in the show notes where you can click on that and apply. I will be back in 2 weeks bringing you another episode. Until then, take care of yourself and take care of each other. And remember, the more we understand about ourselves and each other, the less we have to fear, the more love is here. So here's to happy days and living a sex life unleashed.